Ukrainian authorities report a deadly Russian missile strike on residential areas of a major northeastern city.
Unfortunately, Kharkiv region and Kharkiv city in particular are getting more and more attacks recently.
Plus, a U.S. tech company with hundreds of staffers in Ukraine tells us how it's trying to help local communities while facing its own challenges.
When everything started, it was like a shock, and we needed to figure out what are our next steps. Of course, some people, our employees, they left Ukraine.
And later in the program, how Ukrainian schools and students are taking a creative approach to graduations during wartime. Today is Friday, July 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Michael Lippin, filling in for Steve Miller. The war in Ukraine and its impact on global energy and food supplies dominated talks Friday among foreign ministers of the Group of 20 wealthy nations and major developing countries in Bali. The talks were marked by tension, with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov sitting at the same table, but not speaking to each other directly. Lavrov, who walked out of the talks twice, blamed the lack of dialogue on the U.S. as he spoke to reporters.
You know, it was not us who abandoned all contacts. It was the United States. That's all I can say. And we are not running after anybody suggesting meetings. If they don't want to talk, it's their choice.
A Western official told VOA that Blinken, while speaking to the other ministers, urged Moscow to release Ukrainian grain to the world, but Lavrov was not in the room. As Blinken spoke at a separate meeting with his Indian counterpart, he said the war in Ukraine is adding to difficulties worldwide.
Many of the challenges the world faces that are having an impact on all kinds of people, particularly when it comes to food, energy, these challenges have been dramatically exacerbated by Russia's aggression against Ukraine. There is a report by the UN Development Program that just came out that has found that 71 million more people are now in poverty as a result of the aggression.
As the G20 meeting ended, host nation Indonesia acknowledged that there was no consensus on Ukraine by the 20 participants. Russia has been stepping up missile strikes on the northeastern Ukrainian city of Kharkiv, hitting residential areas and causing casualties. I spoke to reporter Anna Chernikova, who is based in Kyiv, for the latest on the Russian attacks.
So according to the latest report by the Kharkiv local authorities, this night, from July 7th to July 8th, Russian forces had massive missile attack on the city of Kharkiv. The attack hit the residential buildings and residential area. We know about at least three people killed and five people injured. This is for the moment, so numbers could change later on. We also know that there are a lot of damages of the residential infrastructure. This includes not only residential buildings, but also area around the buildings and different kind of civilian storages and garages that were located around. Unfortunately, Kharkiv region and Kharkiv city in particular are getting more and more attacks recently, and this could be connected, of course, with new, assaults on the Donetsk region and Kharkiv region, which is, bordering regions. So this is what we have at the moment.
Anna, I understand that Ukrainians are counter-attacking against Russian forces in the Kherson region. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, today we got a report from the Ukrainian general staff, and we have also confirmation from the satellite images and from the footages provided by the intelligence that Ukrainian forces actually hit two big ammunition storages of the Russian forces. One is located at Novokakhovka, which is Kherson region. This is the recent one. It just happened a couple of hours ago and was confirmed already. So we know that at least a couple dozen of Russian soldiers were killed. Some more are injured as well, and we're waiting for the, you know, final numbers. At least this is the numbers that we will be able to confirm. It was a very big storage of the ammunition, including heavy ammunition of the Russian forces, and also it was a base of the Russian servicemen. Another one, it was a hit in Donetsk region. Another big Russian ammunition depot, which is located in Shakhtarsk in the Donetsk region, which is occupied for some time now. The detonation is still going on, and we know that the detonation is now going on more than 5 hours. So it was quite a huge depot. Again, in terms of casualties, no information is provided yet, but we are waiting for the updates from the general staff. To be later on.
Anna, what have you learned from the Institute for the Study of War about Russia's strategy in the Donetsk region?
So the latest report of the Institute for Study of War suggests that Russian forces can create conditions for a possible assault on Kramatorsk, which will go in parallel to the offensive on Slovensk. So the Institute is kind of, you know, predicting that these two cities would be the crucial ones, and the attack would happen at the same time. They also note that Russian troops have achieved minor success southeast of Siversk, which is also in that area. And they also continue their offensive in the west of Lysychansk, because there are still remaining some villages remaining in Luhansk region, which have not been occupied yet by Russian forces.
Anna Chernikova, thank you very much for bringing us the latest from Kyiv.
Thank you, Michael.
Britain is among the biggest donors of military aid to Ukraine. Its Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, was among the first Western leaders to visit Kyiv following the full-scale Russian invasion in February. Does Johnson's announcement this week that he plans to resign in the coming months put British support at risk? Henry Ridgewell has that story from London.
In early April, Boris Johnson marched through the streets of Kyiv alongside Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky just days after Russian troops had withdrawn from the outskirts of the city. The two men forged a close bond. Johnson made this pledge in his resignation speech Thursday.
And let me say now to the people of Ukraine that I know that we in the UK will continue to back your fight for freedom for as long as it takes.
Zelensky offered this tribute in return. He said, although it is a reflection of the position of British society, the leadership and charisma of the state's leaders are always of particular importance, especially during these times, the time of Russia's full-scale anti-European war, which launched an attack on all Europe via our country. So it is not surprising that Ukrainians feel personal gratitude to Boris. Many Ukrainians expressed sadness at Johnson's resignation. Dmytro Usikov, a resident of Kyiv, said Britain will offer further support, but it will not be in the same way as with Boris Johnson. We can say he is a friend of our country. Britain is second only to the United States in the amount of military aid it has given Ukraine, including anti-tank rockets, artillery, and most recently, advanced multiple launch rocket systems, or MLRSs. Hundreds of Ukrainian troops are receiving training in Britain. In total, Johnson pledged $2.8 billion of military support, alongside $1.8 billion in humanitarian and economic aid. Will his resignation spell a change in Britain's level of support for Ukraine? Unlikely, says analyst John Kampfner.
Not only because it has been, by the standards of this conflict, as successful as any country's approach has been, but also domestically it's popular too.
Britain's Defence Secretary Ben Wallace emphasised the cross-party backing for the military support given to Ukraine.
Britain is full square behind them. And, you know, the assistance Ukraine we give is not just one person. You know, we're not me, not the Prime Minister. It's the whole effort.
Moscow welcomed Johnson's resignation. A foreign ministry spokesperson said the moral of the story was do not seek to destroy Russia. Johnson also sought to reposition Britain in other security arenas, emphasising the importance of the so-called AUKUS security pact with Australia and the US in the Indo-Pacific. But its role is limited, argues Kampfner.
This shift more towards Asia and specifically the power and the threat posed by China, which was set out in the British government's integrated review of just over a year ago, is an important thing. But Britain can only be a player alongside, as you say, the other AUKUS countries, the United States in particular, Australia and Japan, but also the European Union is increasingly an important player, as are countries like South Korea.
After his resignation, Johnson called a number of world leaders. Among the first was a call to Zelensky, reiterating Britain's support. He ended the conversation by telling the Ukrainian president, "You're a hero. Everybody loves you." Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Michael Lippin. A recent photo of a six-year-old Ukrainian boy named Vlad standing near the grave of his mother in the Ukrainian town of Bucha has drawn global attention to the suffering of the Ukrainian people. Vlad's mother, Marina Nomets, died while the family sheltered in the basement of its home during Russia's brief and brutal occupation of Bucha. Maxim Moskalkov has the family story.
Young Vlad's mother, Marina Nomets, was a child care provider. When the war started, the family hid in the basement of their Bucha apartment complex.
This is Marina and me at a park.
Marina's husband, Ivan Dragun, recalls how the family rarely left the basement.
It was hard because it was freezing cold. It was hard to breathe there. So you're sitting there in the dark. You can't go outside. You have a bucket for a bathroom.
Dragun says the shelling was hard on his wife. One night she went to sleep and never woke up.
Marina was always stressed out. She could feel her heart flutter every now and then. She had headaches. She would take heart medication a lot.
Neighbors helped Dragun bury his wife in the yard. The coffin was made from an old wardrobe. Marina had two other children, 13-year-old Sofia and 10-year-old Vladimir, from her first marriage.
Vladimir and Sofia understood, but Vlad didn't. We would tell him that mom went away to earn money, but then slowly he realized what had happened. It was night, and he woke me up and asked, "Dad, did mama die? What could I do?" I said, "Yes, son, mama died. But she's with us. She sees us. She protects us."
A week after Marina's death, Bucha was liberated. Dragun exhumed Marina's body for the forensic exam and then reburied her at the cemetery. The examiner said she died from cardiac distress. Dragun wanted to leave the place that reminded him of his wife's death, but the family didn't have enough money to move. Help came from across the world. An Odessa native living in Virginia, entrepreneur Igor Kirilenko, saw Vlad's picture and wanted to help.
When I saw that picture of Vlad standing at his mother's grave, he looked so sad, and I couldn't do nothing. Vlad reminded me of my son, who is also six. I decided to get in touch with the family.
Kirilenko and Dragun became friends. Kirilenko started a GoFundMe account for Dragun that has already raised over $8,000.
He's a very good man. I'm extremely grateful to him.
Today the family is staying at a boarding house outside Kyiv and are planning to move. One option is Portugal. Friends of the Associated Press photographer Rodrigo Epp, who took the famous shot of Vlad, have offered help. Meanwhile, despite all the horrors and the loss of his mother, Vlad has been spending his summer biking, as children should. Maxim Moskalkov, VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine, and Washington.
In yesterday's program, we heard from a Ukraine-based executive of U.S. tech company Just Answer about how the company has been helping to build a mental health center in the western city of Lviv to provide therapy for people traumatized by war. In the second part of my conversation with Andriy Chemez, I asked him how Just Answer has been coping with its own challenges of operating in Ukraine with a staff of hundreds as Russia escalated its aggression earlier this year.
Well, when everything started, it was like a shock, and we needed to figure out what are our next steps. Of course, some people, our employees, they left Ukraine, especially like women and with children. And yeah, they went to different European countries as Poland or France or Germany. But right now we're getting used to it a little bit. You know, that could sound weird, but yeah, I mean, like the western part of Ukraine was not that much attacked during this war, and we hope that this part of Ukraine will be more stable and not that many Russian missiles will attack us. So we launched many policies and different special policies that were required to those people that left the country. But right now we have many people that returned to Ukraine, and we are trying to work as much stable as we can. I don't know, is that the answer for your question?
Yeah, so I'm also wondering what challenges you face in completing the National Mental Health Center project in terms of construction and trying to open this facility by the deadline?
Well, we have really experienced partners. That's Lviv IT Cluster. We already did many initiatives, for example, the refugee centers. When the war began, we already donated to Lviv IT Cluster, and they were setting up the facilities for refugees, and we had really good experience with that. And also, we were one of the sponsors for the Sky project that they were launching. The Sky project is the help for our air defense system, and we donated to modernize and reconstruct this air defense system so the system could hit as many missiles as the system could. So we have like really good partner in this, and they're handling different issue that comes during the construction. But right now everything goes pretty smooth, and we hope that we will have the opening plans in the beginning of October. And the only challenge is that right now we're estimating like the number of the patients, the number of the people and people that came to western part for mental health sessions, but we don't know how many people will need the therapy right now. We suppose that it will be maybe much more people than we assume right now. So maybe that will be a challenge very soon. But I think that everything goes pretty smooth right now, and everything will be as it planned.
So one more question that I had for you is, before this facility does open in October, mm-hmm. What kind of help can people get if they need some mental health therapy?
Well, right now there are like smaller centers where people can get some help that cost to their mental health, but that is like different separate small initiatives. Well, the thing is to have like one really developed facility where as many patients, as many people that they need the therapy could get it. And also the challenge right now is that people cannot get like a full course of therapy because the therapists that are working with them, they cannot provide like very long-term therapy sessions as they need, so they could basically have only like few sessions or a few conversations with the therapist. It is not something that is really going on for a long time right now. But our mental health center, yeah, it is the aim of it is to have like the full circle, full cycle of therapy over there.
Well, Andriy Chemez, PR and marketing manager for Just Answer in Lviv, Ukraine, thank you for talking to Flashpoint Ukraine.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Around the world, students have been celebrating their graduations, and that includes students in Ukraine. But with the country in the middle of a war, those graduations look and feel different, as Lesya Bakalitz reports in this story narrated by Anna Rice.
The city of Chernihiv in northern Ukraine has been shelled since the war began. High schooler Olga Bibinets remembers attending school the day before Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. She did not return again until April.
Before that, we had this long break. All classes were put on pause.
Olga says no one is talking about a prom or a graduation ceremony anymore.
We already had a spot booked for the prom, the city cultural center. We were all supposed to come there to celebrate, all dressed up and whatnot.
Nothing here is like it was before the war. Graduation photos taken by Stanislav Senik illustrate the realities of growing up during wartime.
This is history, and it's being written right now. I'm sure that it would be important to save these moments in photo albums, both for the Ukrainian people and for the graduates.
But some schools, like this one in Kyiv, are also trying to preserve a sense of normalcy. Ukrainian language teacher and winner of the Ukrainian Global Teachers Prize 2021, Artur Predakov, is watching his class graduate. His school chose a hybrid graduation format.
12 graduates are happy to come to the school in person. Their families, their relatives are all in Kyiv. And 8 more graduates are going to participate in the ceremony online.
They discussed whether it was even appropriate to hold a ceremony and celebration at such a time.
No one wants a carnival. No one wants a red carpet or special effects, stuff like that. No one has even mentioned that.
In Mykolaiv, intense shelling forced administrators to hold a Zoom ceremony.
We waited until the very last moment in early May. We still believed most of the children and teachers would come back home. But then the shelling intensified in this area specifically, so we realized we can't do any in-person event.
Olga Bobinets says she regrets they did not have a graduation party. But she adds there are more important things.
It's a shame this was taken away from us, but we are happy we're alive and healthy. We have realized lately there is nothing more important than that.
Олеся Бакалець, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's all the time we have for today's program. You can find more of VOA's coverage of Ukraine and other global news around the clock on our website, voanews.com, and on our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. On behalf of Flashpoint Ukraine's team, thank you for listening. I'm Michael Lippin. Good night from Washington.
Washington, D.C.